flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest 100% organic cotton sheets from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with sheets that feel breathable to sleep in. You'll experience the purest softness on night one and feel your sheets get even softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com with code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Thursday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. We are one day closer to convoying over to New Orleans for the Super Bowl, thanks to Flight by Yuengling. We are very excited for that, but we're very excited for today. Good to have you with us. I am Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. Hello.
Hey, what's up? I realized something this morning. I've had this gnawing, weird feeling for the last few days, and it's that, much like a child, I don't like it when there's instability at home. And right now with the Texans, there's so much instability. You're trying to find out who D'Amico's new football wife is going to be. Mm-hmm. It's just, I'm waiting for my stepmommy in the form of an offensive coordinator. And there's just so many variables and so many unknowns. And it's not like the Texans have interviewed a long list of people that get that titillates people. And I'm starting to get agitated. So if I act out, just send me to the counselor at school and see if we can work something out. I'm just a little uncomfortable.
That's what I was going to ask you. You know, because you and I are only together on air 4 hours a day. We're in constant communication at the other portions of the
constant.
Day, but not around each other. The rest of that time. Is it affecting your grades? This instability?
I have my daily checklist that's color coded of things that I'm supposed to do.
How's that
to
going?
Help me stay on track with my mental health?
Yeah,
I've got just the tasks, the exercise, like how I need my nutrition, all of that.
Yeah,
full of nothing but red boxes
now.
Bad. Red boxes abound.
That's bad.
I know from history. I've got documented evidence of it. It gets worse. I got to get some green boxes in there today.
Okay. Well, there may be some. Can I share maybe some good news with you here, at least in terms of resolution? I don't know if you're going to like who your new stepmom is.
I want 4K resolution up in here, Sean.
Okay.
Give it to me.
Well,
give me some old square box cathode ray nonsense.
We're interviewing two stepmoms today for you, Seth.
Potential stepmoms.
One is named Nick Cayley, and one is named Bill Lazor, who you've actually spent some time with.
Bill Lazor is on the Seth Payne coaching tree.
He is.
He was, when I was a freshman in college, he was the starting quarterback, record-breaking starting quarterback.
Record-breaking at Cornell,
yes.
Starting quarterback,
yes.
Yeah.
Back when quarterbacks were men, damn it. Mm-hmm. We didn't just spread it all out and dink and dunk all over the place.
1993.
You had to sit in a pocket and take your punishment like a man.
Back when quarterbacks were men. During the grunge era, huh?
That's right, yeah. We listened to Nirvana, yep. Metallica, yep. and we ran the ball, and then we threw the ball sometimes.
That's right. That's right. We entered the field to Pearl Jam, and the opponents were intimidated.
There's interesting things about both these guys. Yeah. I think with Lazer's had, for whatever reason, I keep seeing people say that he's had three jobs as an OC, and I think because of the way they list it, you know, it'll be 2015 through 16 here, 2019 through 20 there, whatever it might be. People look at it like a school year, and they think that he was one and done at those places.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Like 1 year and done. It's been 2 year stints, which it's not like, hey, no, wait, it's two. It's not like it's a marvelous alternative. But in each time he's been an offensive coordinator, he was with a head coach who was on his way out.
Yeah.
So that's not you could go any way with that. You could say, hey, well, he was part of not being the solution, but it was also with guys that haven't gotten head coaching jobs since. It was Marvin Lewis in his last couple years of coaching. It was what's his name from Kansas City?
Nagy.
And it was Joe Philbin.
Yeah.
So I think he's been regarded as a guy who's super intelligent and super bright. Maybe he hasn't been in the right situation, but the thing with Kaylee's interesting because at least once and possibly twice, the Patriots did try to hire him as an offensive coordinator. Notably last year where Gerard Mayo, according to Albert Breer, offered him almost $3 million a year, which is one of the higher paid coordinator jobs in the league.
Oh, yeah.
And Kaylee said, no, I'm going to stay in L.A. with the Rams. They're going to make me the passing game coordinator. Okay. And then previous to that, the year when Bill Belichick ended up hiring Matt Patricia and Joe Judge, or didn't hire him, had them be the offensive coordinator, Kaylee was in the mix. It's not clear from what I saw whether they officially offered him the job or whatever, but Kaylee decided to go with Sean McVay instead. So I think it does paint the picture of a guy that people are intrigued by, but he's waiting for the right opportunity. It seems like the Texans would be that right opportunity. If you're looking at Gerard Mayo with a rookie quarterback and all of that, everything else that goes with it, versus working with C.J. Stroud, I think this might be more appetizing for him.
Okay, so that I like that. I like the things you just said there. Two things. One, if he's had other opportunities and he's been choosy, I'm like, oh, so okay, he's kind of the Ben Johnson of position coaches, you know, like waiting for the right offensive coordinator spot. And this would absolutely qualify to me if I were Nick Kaylee to be able to come in here. The offense is going to be yours. You're going to call the plays. Defensive head coach, really good young quarterback, weapons. Yeah. The biggest project is the offensive line. I would imagine Nick Kaylee, if he's as smart as we're portraying him right now, has already thought through several years ago, maybe like, what an offensive line would look like, and has names in his back pocket as to who he would bring in, maybe potentially with him. The second thing that I like is he's clearly very smart because he said no to Gerard Mayo last year.
$3 million. $3 million, one of the higher paid ones.
He's not going for a bag somewhere. You know what I mean?
Sean, what do we know? What do we know about one of the biggest indicators of success in life? The ability to delay gratification.
That's right.
And delaying gratification when it comes in the form of probably $12 million or so guaranteed, that's delaying your gratification. He was also, I'm getting a little bit annoyed because people keep referring to him as a Kubiak-Shanahan tree guy, where he spent the vast majority of his career in the NFL with the Patriots.
Yeah.
So he's actually seen two different systems, at least, and been exposed to them. He was a tight ends coach with the Patriots, so he's well acquainted with coaching up blocking, working alongside the offensive line, all of that. That's intriguing to me. I think Lazer, the other guy that we found out about that they're going to be interviewing, he's been in the position before in multiple different scenarios with different head coaches. He's worked with a variety of quarterbacks. So I don't think you have to worry about pigeonholing either of those guys into a Shanahan system.
Yeah.
Both of these guys, I think, will be their own guys, as well as the other candidates that they've interviewed. I don't think that any of them are really attached to a specific scheme.
Yeah, so so today is when they're interviewing both of the candidates Seth and I are talking about. Nick Kaylee, the passing game coordinator for the Los Angeles Rams, and Bill Lazer, who's been a special assistant here in Houston, an offense coordinator and a play caller at several different stops. the you know, very different backgrounds. Like Bill Lazor's been all over. You know, Nick Caley has been largely with two organizations since he got to the NFL. So this will be interesting. Now, for what it's worth, Tyler Milner put up a poll yesterday on Twitter. It didn't include Bill Lazor because I don't think his interview had been reported yet, A. And B, you can only put four names up on a Twitter poll. So conveniently enough, the Texans had interviewed three already, and we knew Nick Caley was coming today when Tyler put this poll up. For whatever reason, you know, and I'm not saying this derisively, like Nick Caley is way out in front of all the other three guys on this poll. He's getting like 60 to 70% of the vote. So
I think that there is, for me, one of the my holdups with Nick Caley, just when I first started glancing at everything, was, all right, well, is he that hot a commodity? Have other people identified him as being somebody that, you know, they would want to go for? And not that that's the be-all, end-all for making your determination. But the Patriots, you know, and Gerard Mayo and people who had familiarity with him were willing to spend $3 million per year on him. I think that Sean McVay thinks very highly of him, wanted to retain him, made him the passing game coordinator last year. So the breadth of experience he has still makes me feel better than some of the other candidates, even though he hasn't been the guy in charge and the guy calling plays, all of that.
And meanwhile, everybody, you know, meanwhile, if you just put Chip Kelly's name in a search engine on Twitter or Google or wherever else, put Chip Kelly Texans, all kinds of fan conjecture about Chip Kelly. At what point do we reach in this search where we start to give up hope on the Chip Kelly dream? Do you have a?
Oh, I think now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm
really?
Even yesterday, you were getting annoyed with me yesterday because I was given so many disclaimers before we talked about.
Why do you think I keep getting annoyed with you? You said this like three times
in
the last week.
Body language, Sean.
I don't even remember what you're talking about.
It's one of my boxes that I'm supposed to check off on my mental health checklist. It was like, did I annoy Sean today? Yes or no? And I had to put red in that box.
What were you annoying me with about disclaimers about Chip Kelly, you said?
Oh, that I'm like, every time I talked about Chip Kelly, I said, look, it's all speculation at this point. There have been zero actual reports tying the Texans to Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly currently is on the recruiting trail. I'm seeing photos of him with recruits in front of their fireplaces at home.
Oh, you have?
He's making all kinds of grand promises right this moment.
I hadn't seen that. So he's out on the Ohio State recruiting trail right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had not seen that. Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't, until I see an actual report of interest by either side in that scenario, I'm
you're
not holding my breath on him. It'll be a pleasant surprise if they get him. But, I keep wanting to say daylight's burning. I mean, there's no real timetable for hiring an offensive coordinator. There's, you know, you don't want to go plucking guys off of other people's staffs after the draft or anything. But for the Texans' purposes, man, right now you're scouting players, college players, free agency is coming up. You want to be sure you're on the same page with a guy. So for the sake of having a competitive offense next year and getting the most out of whichever offensive coordinator you do hire, I would prefer that they do it ASAP.
Yeah, I don't get the sense that the Texans better move on this guy or so-and-so is going to take him, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, that would be, to me, that would be the main reason to speed it up is if there's a guy you've identified, but he's been identified by two other teams and you're in a bidding war with him. But yeah, other than that, it doesn't feel like everybody, you know, it doesn't feel like teams. Well, first of all, there's very few teams with an OC opening even right now, you know?
Okay. This is the one big X factor that I think nobody wants to touch with a 10-foot stick.
Okay.
The New England way, for many years under Bill Belichick, was at times to not even name an offensive coordinator.
Mm.
Bill O'Brien was acting as the offensive coordinator in New England for a while before they ever even gave him the title.
Yeah.
Is there a chance that at some point when Nick Caserio gets up to speak to the media, he says something along the lines of, it's a committee approach, or we don't feel the need at this point to name whomever is actually going to be calling plays. We've got it all covered and taken care of. Don't worry about it.
I don't think so. I don't think so, because Nick's not Bill Belichick, and D'Amico Ryans, everywhere he's been, has had an offensive coordinator as a player and a coach. I think that's going to, yeah. So, no. Is there a chance? I mean, there's a chance of anything, I guess, but... But if
you're giving it a 3% chance.
Yeah, something like that. Like, if you ask me to place a wager on it, I'm placing whatever money on no. I don't care what the odds are. I'll place it on no. Are you nervous about that? Are you? It's an interesting thought.
I'm apprehensive of it. Okay. I'm not nervous. I'm not expecting it, but I also
but it's there.
I don't want to go through 6 months of sports radio.
No, no, no. I don't want to. Remember the flat organizational structure? I don't need
I remember that.
I don't need a flat organizational structure on the offensive side of the ball with CJ Stroud. I don't.
Oh.
Make CJ a player OC. That'd be unique.
What was the show with Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson?
True Detective.
True Detective, yeah. Where that was the most popular GIF or GIF back then was Matthew McConaughey saying, time is a flat circle, and crushing the can, talking about the Texans organizational chart.
Yeah, that was fun. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, listen to...
I felt like Matthew McConaughey's character in that movie.
Oh, the other
entire
movie?
Time. Yeah. Depressed, lost.
Yeah. listen to Sports Radio. Yeah, these are better times. Listen to Sports Radio 610 on the Odyssey app for an hour each day. You get a chance to win entry into our Slam Dunk in Vegas National Contest. The winner will be headed to Vegas with flight and hotel accommodations for you and three guests. And y'all get $20,000 to fund the ultimate viewing experience. $20,000 for all of you for the first two rounds of the college basketball tournament. All right, up next, it just hit me yesterday. The Astros need to do this. I was sitting by myself and got irrationally angry about something yesterday with the Astros. They need to do this immediately. We'll tell you what it is coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I don't know why. I don't know why it hit me this way yesterday. It wasn't anything I read. It wasn't anything I saw. It wasn't somebody giving their opinion on something. It just, for whatever reason, you know, I'm just thinking about the Alex Bregman situation with the Astros and how the Astros are just kind of sitting here, you know, waiting around. I honestly don't know. I don't know if Dana Brown is super excited to bring Bregman back at this price based on where the Astros are versus the luxury tax. Like every inkling you get from Dana Brown is like, yeah, you know, the door's cracked. Oh, that's right. I got to call Scott Boras back. I totally forgot. Yeah.
Like, yeah. I'm taking everything with a grain of salt at this moment, including the initial report that the original deal is still on the table, frankly, because that just doesn't make any sense to me. So I think there's so many moving parts here, and we don't know exactly what either side is thinking, that I just know it's a possibility.
Yeah, and so if the original offer, 6 years, $156 million, is still on the table, then for whatever reason, I went from like 4 on a scale of 1 to 10 to 11 on a scale of 1 to 10 to they need to give him a date. They need to give him a drop-dead date and say, we are removing this off. At this point, all he's doing is using your offer as leverage. If he wanted to be an Astro, he would have said yes. There's nobody else out there in this neighborhood that he wants to play for right now. So I got agitated on behalf of the Astros, just like, okay, let's be a man about this and tell him, what's today, Seth? January 30th? So you got till Sunday to figure this out. You got February 2nd. It's going to be February. I don't know if you know this. Pitchers and catchers show up in February. Players show up in February for spring training. It's happening soon. Give him a date and say, I know you're Alex Bregman. I know you're a franchise icon. Take it or leave it. I feel like the Astros are just getting used for this Hail Mary of a $200 million deal right now is starting to piss me off.
Yeah, it can't be a Daryl Morey deadline, like when he was going to trade Oshik, and they said there was a deadline.
It was Motiejunas.
Motiejunas, that's right, sorry. It was a Turk. Motiejunas isn't a Turk. So it was some guy from over there, and he said,
big tall
listen,
white guy.
We're going to trade him by this date, and that's it. Yeah. And then the deadline passed, and Daryl Morey said, well, you know, these deadlines, sometimes they're not hard deadlines.
Yeah.
No, it has to be a firm and tough deadline for Bregman. That, yes, the deal is either there, it's there until this date, and then it's not, and we got to move on.
Yeah, we can only go by what we're seeing. Like, you know, Scott Boras is not giving us a ton. You know, Dana Brown gives us what he gives us. Again, I think Dana Brown's is about an open book as there is for general managers. Like he's pretty almost to a fault, like kind of honest in these press conferences. So I take his demeanor now to be honestly like how he feels and how the franchise feels about this. This definitely feels like whatever is being stirred more from Bregman's side. And if he's that if he's that anxious to stir the pot with the Astros like that, well, damn it, take the offer. If you're not getting anything in the neighborhood, like, it's like, again, it's February on Saturday. Like, we got to get going on this thing.
I like the thought of Scott Boras just sitting out there twisting in the wind.
Oh, I do too. That's,
I would love it. I would love it if I found out eventually that Dana Brown actually didn't have any thoughts about bringing Alex Bregman back, but he just wanted to let them feel it a little bit. They're like, I don't know. All right. Well,
it feels kind of like what he's doing.
I know. I'm like, maybe I'll get back to him. And maybe I'll send him a text that's simply, sup. To Scott Boras.
That was,
and yeah, that, what do you got for me? I'm not the one doing the talking here, little Mr. Yappity Yap. You got to be the one doing the talking.
It was kind of a power move by Dana Brown. Hey, Ben, do we have the Dana Brown? Dana Brown, like, you just, in going back through the audio yesterday, like, the my favorite part of the press conference that we didn't really dig into too much was this part right here.
Well, I owe Boras a call. He sent me a text, you know, today, so I'll probably end up getting back to him.
I'll probably end up getting back to him.
this is high school relationship drama to a T. This is, and I feel like Dana Brown right now has got the upper hand.
Oh my God, dude, that was the most relatable part of that, because I've got, like, at any given time, I've got like 5 or 6 people I owe a phone call back to.
Oh yeah, well, you've got the upper hand on them.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So are any of those people, like, desperately waiting for your answer?
I don't think so. No.
Is it a business situation of any variety?
No, no. If it's a business situation, they get a call back for sure.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay. You know where I go. If there's a trail of money, then they will get a call back.
This might be the end of maybe Astros players at least firing their agent to go work with Scott Boras, because Scott Boras is the money train. I mean, Correa, granted there was the medical issue, but Correa, it's not like it was an easy process for Correa. And he ended up getting a really good deal in a place that he doesn't seem or never seemed all that crazy about. Remember when they asked him about living in Minnesota, he said, hey, they've got Netflix.
Yes.
That's your Chamber of Commerce moment right there. Hey, we've got Netflix.
Minnesota, we've got Netflix.
And you know, now Bregman gets it, and it's not just a clear, uncluttered path to riches with just because he has Scott Boras as his agent.
Yeah, look, we don't know how Bregman's thing is going for sure.
I think Keuchel was with Boras too the year he sat around until summertime.
He may have been. I think you're right about that. Look, it's been hit or miss with Boras over the last 5 years as teams have gotten. By and large, teams have gotten a little more savvy about these long-term contracts. I mean, there's some teams that just don't care, you know?
Yeah. It's Dallas Keuchel, May 6th, 2019. Dallas Keuchel said he received offers. Some his agent, Scott Boras, recommended he seriously consider.
Yeah.
So, and remember, it would still be a while before he would sign.
June. It would be a whole other month until he signed that season. Bregman needs to... But the Astros need to initiate this. If I mean, they're the ones saying, and Dana Brown is saying there is still a line of communication between the two. And I'm being dead serious. Like, give him a date then. Like, give him a date and force him to do something as it pertains. Now, if he says no to the Astros, that's fine. But we're not going to be this cuck that's just sitting there with this 6-year $156 million. Holding it, clutching it in our hands, waiting for him to do something.
Well, he's still out there gallivanting about the league, talking to other dudes.
Correct.
You know?
Yeah.
No. I'm not gonna be a schmuck for you.
That's right.
You're gonna go out there and dilly dally with the Cubs and all these other teams. Like, no. All right. This is the ultimatum, but you got to hold to it.
So we got two things. So in the opening of the show, we talked about the Texans OC. Which is your favorite watch right now? Bregman watch? Texans OC watch or Rockets trade deadline next week watch? Which is your favorite watch of all those?
I expect something to happen in one of those watches, which is the Texans watch. So I'm going to go with the Texans watch.
Yeah.
I don't expect anything to happen with the trade deadline of note other than maybe a minor transaction or something. I mean, there's been 0-0-0 hint that the Rockets are really all that interested in making any kind of a move.
Correct.
They're at least certainly an aggressive move with one of the bigger names. And it all makes sense. You know, a lot of people have pointed out various moves teams have made to get over that championship hump. And the vast majority of the successful ones are done in the offseason. It's in this team too, especially bringing somebody in that might be good on paper, but might also disrupt the chemistry. No matter how good you are, there's always a learning curve with Kevin Durant with the damned Warriors, and that was already a really, really good team. So the midseason trade for a team like this as it's composed, I just don't have a huge appetite for
it. No, I don't either. Not the way things are going right now, for sure. Nick Cayley is way out in front. Oh, wait, hang on a second here. Here we go. Nick Cayley. All this guy's ever done is be a tight ends coach. It could end up being a wonderful idea, or Cayley could end up being Bobby Slowick 2.0. Sure.
He was the passing game coordinator with the Rams last year. Yeah. For whatever that's worth. It's Sean McVay's offense.
Yeah.
You know, hey, Bobby Slowick was the passing game coordinator with the 49ers, but so was Mike McDaniel and Matt LaFleur before him, correct? And so it's whoever it was. So there's a huge crapshoot element to hiring a coordinator, especially if you're going to go with somebody who hasn't been a coordinator before, and that's just the uncertainty you have to live with until we figure out if it was a good hire in round about October or November of this coming year, this coming season.
Cayley versus the others is both outside the organization, and he's from outside the organization and has the most credible resume. That's why I voted for him. Chip Kelly still intrigues me the most. I think, look, if we were doing a popularity contest, maybe I should do that today. Remember back when remember that era where the Texans searched for a head coach every year? From 2021 through 2023 or 24, whatever it was. Three years in a row they were searching for a head coach. And I did those approval polls on Twitter where I'm like, hey, quite simply, if the Texans hired Eric Bieniemy, would you approve? Yes or no? Should I do that for these OC candidates too today? Should that be a project where I'd see if they approve Nick Cayley, Bill Lazor? Should I do the approval polls for all these guys and see what the public
just
thinks of them?
Just what the actual approval
just
rating
yes
is?
Yes or no, would you approve of the hire?
Okay, let's do that.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Would you approve of the hire? Because I think we're heading towards a place where the Texans are going to hire somebody that the fan base is going to be very mixed on right now.
Yeah. Matt LaFleur was an offensive coordinator with the Rams before he was hired to be the offensive coordinator with the Titans for 1 year before he got the Green Bay head coach.
Okay.
And that's the Titans one. It wasn't like they had a great year or anything. He got the job as a head coach the next year. But when he got hired to be the offensive coordinator for the Rams, again, all right, it's Sean McVay's offense. Mm. It feels like more of a nominal title than anything else. You have more responsibilities in terms of game planning and execution and all of that. But it's just it's just different when you're underneath an offensive head coach. The best argument for hiring a coordinator who wasn't a coordinator before but was in-house was D'Amico Ryans. And because he had never been a coordinator, didn't have a lot of coaching experience. His playing experience factored in heavily in all of that. But he did really well with the 49ers. So it's not like – and I've said this all along. My parameters are, I would prefer a guy who's – got actual coordinator experience, not just because of the play calling side of it, but because of the coaching the entire team side of it, coaching all the position groups side of it. But it's not like any of those are, 100% set in stone, because there's so many examples of various guys that just hit it out of their park in their first time as a coordinator.
Yeah, yeah. How involved is CJ in this process, do you think?
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's another big crapshoot. How much do you involve the quarterback? Generally, I think you ask for their input, but you don't also want him to be in the position of the guy who's making the decision.
Rubber stamping it. Yeah.
For the quarterback's own sake, it's always really dicey when you allow the quarterback too much into it, not just for the organization, from the organization's perspective, but from the player himself. You don't want players to start looking at the quarterback as one of them instead of one of us.
Suits.
Yeah. It's dicey. It's always, and it's unique to every situation.
Text message. It's funny you bring up True Detective, Seth. I just watched the commercial. I watched this yesterday, too, where Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey, they revised their True Detective roles in a commercial for advocating more production companies making movies in the state of Texas.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know if it was... I don't know if it's running during the Super Bowl. There have been some Super Bowl commercials that have already dropped ahead of time. There's one that I saw yesterday where Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal are reprising It's a Hellman's commercial. They're reprising the scene in When Harry Met Sally where she had the fake orgasm at the booth there.
Yeah. And oh, is that what that was?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was too young to understand what was going on. I thought it was food poisoning.
Or cheering something on the TV in the diner there. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why
I thought it was so curious that the old lady said, I'll have what she's having.
Yeah.
I was like, that's food poisoning, lady. What are you doing?
Why would you want that? Meg Ryan, she's aged better than Billy Crystal. That's my hot take on that commercial.
Has she?
Yeah, aged
in terms of like actual physical appearance,
yes,
or with career and
physical
whatnot?
Appearance. Okay. Yeah, I have no idea. With
oh, really?
The career. Yeah. She looks.
I haven't seen Billy Crystal in a while.
He looks like an old man. It's not. It's no crime. You know, I'm just saying. Like Meg Ryan looks. She still looks pretty good. You know,
does she look good, or does she look like she's all bloated up with various substances?
No, I don't think so. I'd have to go back and watch. I watched it last night, and I'm like, she still looks pretty good. She's got to be. Well, that movie was 1987, so we're talking 30, almost 40 years ago that movie was.
So she's at least like 60 or 70.
Got to be mid-60s at least, yeah.
Well, good for Meg Ryan.
Yeah, she's doing good, man. That's good.
You know, the other movie, Hellman's money.
Yeah.
The movie I can remember where I was too young to know what was going on was when we were watching Ghostbusters, and I was sitting next to my mom, and I remember this is the first time I realized I had a career in comedy. Was without even with you know unintentional comedy.
Right.
Where people are laughing at me more than with me.
Yes.
We're in the scene in Ghostbusters where I think it's Bill Murray asks the old lady, "Are you menstruating?" And everybody laughed. And it got quiet, and I turned to my mom and said, what's menstruating?
At the top of your lungs in the theater.
And that got a big laugh. I was like, yeah. I'm talented, damn it.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I am.
Someday.
I don't know why everybody's laughing, but they thought that was funny.
Someday I'm going to be in Ghostbusters 7. Yes. All right. Payne and Pendergast. Hey, we're on our way to the big game on Radio Row on Sunday. We're all leaving to head there, and we'll be on the air on Monday live from Radio Row. It's going to be fun. Big thanks to Flight by Yingling for not only loading us up with cases and cases of beer, but sponsoring our trip there. We're really excited to be partnered with them on this, with the Low T Center on this as well. Exclusive Furniture sponsoring the hot seat where our guests will be sitting when we interview them. And then the live stream will be up and running from Radio Row. You'll be able to watch us on the live stream thanks to Mokarem Injury Lawyers. Up next, headlines. It is a big day for interviews for the Texans. Big night for the Rockets tonight, man. They're trying to do something I don't think anybody around the NBA thought that they were going to be able to do a week ago. We'll tell you what that is coming up next.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's get into headlines. Hey, John Harris is going to join us at the top of the hour. He was at the Senior Bowl this week, so we can get in some good topics with Johnny. Texans related, draft related. Haven't talked to Johnny since the end of the football season, so he'll join us at the top of the hour. Speaking of the Texans, big day today on the offensive coordinator front, at least for interviews. One in-house, one out-of-house. Nick Caley is the out-of-house one. He is the Rams passing game coordinator, was with the Patriots for a number of years, was with the Patriots for 6 seasons while Nick Caserio was there for nearly a decade overall, and has spent the last few seasons in LA with the Rams. He's interviewing for the offensive coordinator job. He's a big favorite of Texan fans, at least if you believe Twitter polls. Bill Lazor, who has been in the building the last couple years as a special assistant on the offensive side of the ball, spent a lot of time around C.J. Stroud, and his claim to fame is he's a college teammate of one Seth C. Payne. He is interviewing today as well. So two candidates up today, Seth, for a position where we've had three interviews already.
Right, and with both these guys, I think the biggest thing that people point to with Nick Caley as a drawback is that it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of buzz about him, that especially the year when Belichick, the year that Belichick had Matt Patricia and Joe Judge be his offensive coordinator, Caley was a guy who had been in the building as a tight ends coach for several years at that point, and they chose to go with two guys that didn't even coach offense instead of Nick Caley. For what it's worth, last year, Gerard Mayo reportedly tried to hire Nick Caley to be his offensive coordinator and offered almost $3 million per year, which would be really high for one of the highest coordinator salaries in the league. Caley turned it down and went back to the Rams, where he'd been the previous year, to be the passing game coordinator. McVay gave him a bump up in title. I don't know if it was a bump up in responsibilities to a great degree, but that's the sum total of the buzz there. With Lazor, Lazor checks off a lot of boxes in terms of, hey, I want somebody that's been there and has done it before because you've got a young quarterback, all of that. He's had three offensive coordinator stints. Each of them lasted 2 years or less.
Yeah.
With the Bengals, the Bears was an interesting one because he took over play calling duties from Matt Nagy midway through the first year, and the offense got better. Then the next year, Nagy took back play calling responsibilities. So he's been in three spots where he didn't have awesome quarterbacks, and he had coaches who were on their way out. Both of those guys would end up getting fired and haven't gotten fired since. I think with him, it's always been that I think people really, really respect his intelligence, and it's just a matter of whether, from what they've seen with him the last 2 years and whichever input he had or did not have in the offense last year, they can evaluate it from that regard. So that's where we are right now. Nobody that they've interviewed so far is a guy that I think you would say has a whole lot of buzz around him about him around the league.
Yeah,
right. Fair to say.
Yeah, I definitely think that's fair to say, 100%.
Yeah.
And I think as a result, if this is the pool, if they choose from one of these five guys, I think Texan fans are going to be, I don't think they're going to be angry, because I think Texan fans were so upset with Bobby Slowik at the end that there's an element of, okay, one of the things this guy has going for him is he's not Bobby Slowik. You know, that happens sometimes. You're like, all right, it's something new. And with any of these guys, I think there's certain things you can look at that you can draw optimism from. None of them check all the boxes, but I think it's safe to say all or at least most of them check enough boxes to where, at least for me, I would go in going, all right, I'm intrigued at least. I feel, you know, like, and then I need to hear what the guy's all about. You know, I want to see what the press conference sounds like and all that good stuff. But it's a diverse group. I mean, you're right. Like, Jeff Nixon's got an interesting background where he's called plays, college and pro. Bill Lazor has the most diverse background out of all of them, just because I think he's been doing it longer than any of these other guys.
I don't think that you can look at any of these guys and say that you can't really pigeonhole them into a type of system.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of people calling Caley just another Shanahan guy, which is very inaccurate, because Caley spent the majority of his NFL career with the Patriots.
Yes.
So he's seen different systems and schemes. Likewise with Bill Lazor, he's seen a bunch of different systems and schemes. He's worked with multiple different quarterbacks, and he's worked with C.J. Stroud. That would be the interesting one. If C.J. had input into it, like if you sat C.J. Stroud down like he was at the custody hearing and he said, who do you want to live with, Gerard Johnson or Bill Lazor?
Yeah.
You've been with both of these guys for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Who gets custody? I wonder, we have no idea which guy C.J. would choose, but it would be interesting.
No, it would be interesting. He's got more history with Gerard because he has that Elite 11 background. He goes all the way back to a teenager with Gerard.
Right. I mean, in terms of duration of the relationship, but he's only worked with him for the same amount of time as Bill Lazor.
Yeah, yeah.
In the professional level.
Yep. I'm looking at Bill Lazor's career history. So he went straight from being a player at Cornell to being an assistant on the staff for 7 years there, huh? He went straight.
Yeah.
He went straight into coaching. He was not like one of these Ivy Leaguers that dipped his toe in the water at Goldman Sachs or something like that and said, "Nope, I want to put my hands in the clay and mold a young Seth C. Payne into an NFL defensive lineman." So yeah,
right, yeah. So and then he was with Joe Philbin for a couple of years. Ryan Tannehill is his quarterback there in 14 and 15. He was with Marvin Lewis in 2017 and 2018, and then he was with Nagy in 2020 and 21.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about the Nagy thing is he was with Trubisky for Trubisky's last year there, and with Justin Fields for Justin Fields' rookie year there in Chicago.
Right. These are the quarterbacks that he's worked with. No, he wasn't there
in 2021. I'm looking at his
gotcha.
If Wikipedia.
Right, yeah,
is wrong.
Yeah. No, he wasn't the offensive coordinator that year, or he was the offensive coordinator, but Nagy was calling plays.
Okay.
These are the quarterbacks he's worked with: Ryan Tannehill, Andy Dalton, Jeff Driscoll for five games.
Okay.
Yeah, he's got some Driscoll cat experience.
Nice.
Mitch Trubisky, Nick Foles. And then Justin Fields again in 2021, and then again with Andy Dalton and Nick Foles that year too.
Okay,
so it's I don't know which one of those quarterbacks, except for maybe Ryan Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill had that resurgence in Tennessee, where you could say, all right, well, yeah, if he didn't work magic with those quarterbacks, then what could he do? And likewise with those coaches that he was working for, Marvin Lewis in his last 2 years, and then with Joe Philbin and Matt Nagy, none of those guys have gotten jobs again as head coaches.
Yeah.
So I think with Lazor, a lot of the appeal to the Texans or what have you is going to be their in-house experience with him. And he's a super bright guy.
Yeah.
It would be based totally, I think, on CJ and then D'Amico Ryan's and Nick Caserio's experiences with Bill.
My two biggest things with any of these guys is what kind of offensive line are you going to put together? What are you going to do to make this offensive line better? And two, what's your feel in-game on play calling? Like it felt like Bobby just kept running a lot of the same stuff without any sort of regard for what the other team was doing. You know, it felt like that. I'm not saying it was that. It felt like that. And you just watch some of these other guys, like the best offensive coordinators just know the exact. I mean, I know I'm going to pull Andy Reid here, who's the best of the best, but like that, the Samaje Perine play to close the game, you know, like stuff like that.
I mean, the hard thing is for coaches on the staff, I think there are probably a lot of coaches on the staff who are having the same frustration that fans in the stands were having about some of Bobby's inability to adjust.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about halftime adjustments. I'm talking about throughout the game and from week to week especially.
Yeah.
It felt like it took them several weeks to acknowledge even that they were going to see a whole bunch of cover two.
Right.
You know, like Bobby said as much in one of his press conferences that they were really surprised by how much cover two they were seeing, and that in a few weeks into it, oh wow, yeah, we're really going to keep seeing this.
Yep.
Like, yeah, all right, Bobby. So I wonder how many people on the staff were biting their tongue and what have you, and then how much of that do they divulge when they're if it's Gerard Johnson or Bill Lazor, you know, how do they have those conversations at the end of the season? Because you never want to be the guy who's selling out your boss.
Right.
That's one of the hard things about being a coach is that you really got to bite your tongue a lot if you don't agree with what the boss is doing. I mean, you got to be frank with him, but you can't go talking smack to the coach or the owner about it.
That's right. You got to be a team guy. No question. Not many headlines today, but Rockets in Memphis tonight to close out this 4-game road trip. I wonder. I don't know what the parlay would have been of them going undefeated on this road trip, but boy, when three of the teams are Boston, Cleveland, then Boston, and now Memphis tonight. I mean, you're talking about three of the top six teams in the NBA by record right now, and the Rockets, who've had good success against Memphis this year so far, trying to close things out tonight. I will be watching that on my couch tonight for sure. Yes. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. John Harris was in Mobile, Alabama the last few days at the Senior Bowl. Draft guru, Texan sideline reporter. We'll see who Johnny had eyes on there. What should the Texans be shopping for in the draft? What would Johnny have been shopping for over at the Senior Bowl? We'll talk to Texan sideline reporter John Harris coming up next.